This is Mornings with Kale in Northern Colorado's voice, 1310 KFKA.
Welcome back, everybody. Sherry Pike in for Gail this morning, 1310 KFK and 1310KFK.com. Forget to tell you that if you want to text in, if you want to have anything that you want to add, please call the KFK or please text the KFK text line 970-478-1310. If you are new to the text line, please text KFKA to that number the first time you use it. You can also call into the studio at 970-353-1310. If you have something that you want to add or you want to talk to me, please feel free to do so. I love talking to people. You know, over the last few years, we have seen the Colorado State Legislature just annihilate pretty much anything and everything that they can when it comes to law enforcement. We have had police accountability bills go through the state. We have had the death penalty taken off of the state usability. We've had qualified immunity taken away from police officers. We've had arrest standards changed. Every time you turn around, there is something different happening to law enforcement. There have been calls for defunding the police officers. There was an attempt to take the police department out of the ability to arrest people on school grounds for things that they would do on school grounds. Fortunately, that has gone away. But many school districts have gotten away from school resource officers and have gone to, I don't know, hugs and kisses. I'm not exactly sure what it is that they think is going to happen when somebody gets in trouble in school. But every time you turn around, there is something that is attacking our law enforcement. I had to giggle. And it really wasn't funny, but it was funny. I mean, if you think about it, there was a story on TV the other night about a situation in Aurora with a DUI, and the police were called out on this DUI, and it took the police over 2.5 hours to get to the scene. There was an accident, and Aurora police didn't show up for a while. And don't get me wrong, I know the Aurora police are in the news all the time. The Aurora Police Department has some problems that the Aurora Police Department needs to take care of. But I found it funny that one of the people that was being interviewed about how long it took the Aurora Police Department to show up was one of the same women that I've seen on TV championing for defunding the police. Well, I don't know if the Aurora Police Department has done any defunding of its police department yet. I don't know if that's the reason why it took 2.5 hours to show up for a DUI. But you don't get both. You don't get to defund the police department and then complain when the police aren't there for you. You don't get to pick and choose when the police show up. The police are out there to do a job. But coronavirus has even caused a bigger problem with that. Things that you would normally be arrested for or sent to jail for, you've been given summonses for because the governor ordered that jails and prisons were supposed to release some of their worst criminal inmates. Well, we've already seen in Weld County what that has done. I've written two stories about that since this has all happened, or about various laws. There was a ban the box law that the state put in a couple of years ago, that if you're a convicted felon, you no longer have to tell prospective employees or employers that you're a convicted felon because they want to give you a second chance. Well, here, a while back, a few weeks ago, a kid who killed both of his parents out in Burlington when he was 12 years old was convicted for murder as a 12-year-old juvenile, sent to the state juvenile detention facility for 7 years, was let out on parole. Nobody really knew he was out on parole. There was no big notice about it. He decides all of a sudden that because his records were sealed as a juvenile, he's now 20-some-odd years old. He thought he'd go try to buy a gun at Shields over on I-25 in Sentara. So he goes to try to buy a gun. Unfortunately, when you have a felony on your record, that felony is not sealed from gun purchases. So he was caught trying to buy a gun as a convicted felon. He is now facing a court appearance in Larimer County for that charge. But ironically, while he was on TV for that, somebody at a Loveland nursing home recognized him as being somebody that worked at the nursing home facility with him. So here's a kid who killed both of his parents when he was 12 years old, who was able to obtain a job at a nursing home with at-risk adults because of A, banned the box, and B, when the nursing home did a background check, it didn't come up because his record had been scrapped. So they didn't know he was a convicted felon. They didn't know he'd killed both of his parents. Immediately was fired. This same kid had gotten an EMT license because the Department of Regulatory Affairs didn't realize that he had a felony. They took that away from him. He was kicked out of the United States Army when they realized that he was a felon because they didn't realize he was a felon. Then we turn around and we have another guy who's released. We still don't know why he was released early, but he was released early from prison. He had a 17, 18 year long rap sheet of assault and attempted assault that would just boggle the mind, was released early from prison, came home, was living with his mom, and months after he was released, that looks like he may have been gotten parole early because of the COVID releases, kills his mom in Eaton. This just seems to be an ongoing theme all of a sudden. Well, the bigger ongoing theme that we're talking about this morning is the fact that currently sitting in the Well County Jail is at least 34 people awaiting trial for murder. And that's just in Weld County. Larimer County has 22. Adams County has 43. That is just what I know of from when I actually got the records request. Talked to the sheriff yesterday in preparation for the show this morning, and he's had some more put in his jail since I got my original records request 2 weeks ago. But, you know, one of the things about being an investigative reporter is for the last 2 weeks, I've taken 108 names and ran them through the court system and tried to find out where they are and what's going on. So it takes some time to put these stories together. So in the meantime, there's been more. They're in and out, and it's a fluid situation. But I think the point is the point. You've got 103 people sitting in jail in three counties that make up 20% of the state's population awaiting murder trial. There will be more on that when we come back. Sherry Pfeiff in for Gail from the Auto Collision Specialist Studios, 1310 KFKA.
The Power Trip, weekdays at 11 on 1310 KFKA. The UNC Bears playing Northern Colorado's voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Welcome back, everybody. Sherry Pfeiff in this morning at a 7:21. In for Gail in the Auto Collision Specialist Studios. So excited to be with you. We are almost halfway through the second hour. When we left, we were talking about a story that I wrote that will be out today on CompleteColorado.com, page 2, about the unusual trend of suspects sitting in jail across the state right now for murder. And when I say murder, I mean any type of felony murder charge. Could be vehicular homicide, could be attempted murder, could be first-degree murder, second-degree murder. Regardless, they're all felonies. They were all attempts and or successes at killing folks. And right now, there seems to be this growing trouble with them sitting in jail awaiting trial. And mostly, the backlog in the jails is simply because of COVID. The courts were shut down for so long that they weren't able to get these guys through. Not that that's an excuse or anything, because the point is, we still have 38 people on trial for murder in Weld County. How fast you move them through the system, the point is, they still killed 44 people. Those 38 people that came across the records request that I submitted to Weld County, six of them were for double murders. And I think probably one of the most famous that we're all following right now is the murder of the local jazz musician Scott Sessions and his girlfriend Heather Frank in a murder triangle. And that one has Scott Sessions, for full disclosure, was a very dear friend of mine, known the man since I was in high school. And his murder suspect has been sitting in the Weld County Jail since February of 2020. He was arrested right before COVID, and there has been one delay after another. And not only is this costing the taxpayers money on the district attorney's side, but it's also costing taxpayers money on the public defender's side, because that that's who's defending him. So if you consider he's had, and he's got two women that are defending him from the public defender's office, and this has been going on since February of 2020. So by the time he goes to court, it'll be almost two full years since he was initially arrested on this double homicide. There has been one delay after another. COVID has caused some of those. But for the most part, not necessarily, because they have still been done virtually. But the bigger problem that I found, and it was interesting for my story, when I spoke with both the sheriff, because when the sheriff comes on in the next half hour, he'll talk about what this problem is for him at the county jail, because the problems are in housing and what this means for his jail and what he has to do, as well as current COVID restrictions. But one of the other problems that I spoke with former 18th Judicial District Attorney George Brockler, who you may recognize that name, he ran for Attorney General in the last election against Phil Weiser. But George and I were talking about why this is a problem overall, not just murder suspects, but overall. And, you know, one of the things that we talked about was when you only have so many court days in a year. It doesn't matter if you've got 90 people in jail for murder or two people in jail for murder. You only have 365 days in a year. You only have 5 working days in a week. And there's like 14 or 16 something legal holidays where the courts are closed. So there's only so many days in the year, 200 or so, that they can actually go to trial. That number is stagnant. It doesn't change. So when you all of a sudden get this backlog of murder trials that you absolutely have to prosecute, what do you do with everything else that's on the books? What do you do with the guy that was convicted of stealing his next door neighbor's chainsaw? What do you do with the guy who is on his third DUI? What do you do with the guy who stole the car down the road? What do you do with the woman who stole a bag of groceries from the local grocery store? Those are still crimes that are taking place in Colorado. Well, our state legislature has decided that they are what they call lesser felonies, and they're trying to decriminalize those lesser felonies because, quote unquote, Leslie Herod has said nobody was the victim. Insurance will pay for that. That one's still just, she said that in reference to the Black Lives Matter riots that took place in Denver. And yes, I'm going to call them riots because that's what they were. While they started out as peaceful protests, and there's no problem with peaceful protests, and I encourage people to peacefully protest, they turned into riots. When buildings are burnt, when people lose their business, when buildings are looted, and things are torn down, and things are graffitied, that turns into a riot. So a section of those Black Lives Matter protests became riots. And when those riots took place and businesses were burned and businesses were destroyed, Representative Leslie Herod out of Denver was quoted numerous times as saying, not a big deal. There's insurance. It'll pay for that. Well, apparently she forgot about deductibles, and apparently she forgot about premiums, and apparently she forgot about some insurance policies have clauses that won't pay for rioting. But I digress. So you have all of these lesser crimes that now the district attorneys have to figure out what they're going to do with them. How are they going to handle them? We have to worry about getting people in and out of the court system. So a lot of these are being pled out. A lot of these are not even coming to court. Charges are being dropped. Charges are being, dismissed so that we can get to the murder victims. Well, even in the past, or the murder suspects, well, even in the past, when you've had somebody on trial for murder, you've always had this little nuance where you could plea bargain those cases in some cases by threatening the death penalty. In the case of my friend Scott Sessions, the man that's on trial for his murder easily could have been a candidate for the death penalty because there were extenuating circumstances. It came out during preliminary hearings that the way that Scott and the other victim were brutalized could have caused the death penalty. Well, Colorado took death penalty off the table a couple of years ago. So we don't have the death penalty anymore to bargain with some of these guys. So the district attorney no longer has that tool. Now the defense attorneys have nothing to lose. They can spend 2 years fighting a case because if they lose, they lose. But if they win, their client may not end up in jail for the rest of his life. Their client may end up in jail only for a month or so. So these lesser crimes are being dismissed or pled out to smaller charges because we now have, because of COVID and because of other laws on the books, all of these crimes that really don't exist anymore. And now we've got a problem where now we have a backlog of murder suspects and we have a district attorney's office that only has so much staff, so much time, so much energy, so much money to put into this. And it is causing a real problem for the sheriffs around the county in housing these inmates. It is 7:30, and this time check is sponsored by the Candlelight Dinner Playhouse, where Shrek the Musical takes center stage through August 22nd. For tickets and showtime information, visit ColoradoCandlelight.com. Sherry Pipe in for Gale when we come back. Sheriff Steve Reams.
What's happening in your own backyard? Listen to NoCo Now with Tanner Schwint on Northern Colorado's Voice, 1310 KFKA. Today's headlines, podcasts of Mornings with Gale and more, and a schedule of upcoming sports broadcasts. Find them at 1310KFKA.com.
There's a lot of bad girls, bad boys, bad children, bad everything running around the state of Colorado right now. On the line with me, Weld County Sheriff Steve Reams. Steve, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me on again.
Hey, no, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. Good morning. I hope you've had a few cups of coffee because I know I'm still trying to get enough down me.
Yeah, that's definitely part of the morning routine.
Yeah, exactly. And I am not a morning person, so every time I do fill in for Gail, I'm always like, okay, pot of coffee before 5 a.m., I have to. Anyway, so I've kind of been talking a little leading into my story that comes out today on this thing that I've been working with you with for, it seems like, forever, because unfortunately, there are so many bad girls out there right now that it took me a while to get them all, run them all through the court system. But we were talking, and you are currently in a predicament that in 25 years of law enforcement, you have never seen before with the number of murder suspects hanging out with you at the jail right now. Talk to me a little bit about what's going on.
Well, our court systems essentially shut down at the beginning of 2020 for COVID, so there were no major trials going on. And that meant suspects who were in jail for murder basically just sat there. And on top of that, during that same legislative cycle, the Democrats that were in charge of the legislature also removed the penalty for murder. They removed the death penalty, I should say, for murder. So you kind of have this this weird effect where oftentimes that charge or that punishment would have been threatened against someone who was suspected of homicide to try to, you know, ease the burden on the court and get someone to just take a plea and sentence to the Department of Corrections. Well, those opportunities are gone. So essentially, we have a whole bunch of murder suspects sitting in our jail, and they're not going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah, you and I were talking about the average length of stay at the jail has increased by, I think you said something like 16 days over just the last year or so. What is causing that?
So, yeah, for your listeners, you know, we do an average of how long a person typically stays in jail, and that number had always been around 21 or 22 days prior to COVID. It's crept up to between 36 and 38 days, and that's a reflection of how long it's taking for the court process to work with individuals in our jail. Again, that's an average, so we still have people that come in and book out, you know, within 24 hours. But those more serious offenses, they're sitting in jail much longer, so it's driving that average way up.
Right, and I think I was looking at the list that I got from your department or from your office on the murder suspects that are sitting in there, and you've got some guys in there that have been in there since 2018. I mean, and you know, one of the, and this is in the county jail. These are, you know, one of the suspects that's sitting in there that I just spoke about coming in from the last segment was Kevin Eastman, who's in on trial for the murders of Scott Sessions and Heather Frank, and he's been in there since February of 2020, and just hanging out in the jail. What does that do for you in how you house these guys when they're, you know, sitting in county jail as capital murder suspects?
Well, obviously, we're set up to be a short-term facility. Our goal is to hold people until they can get their day in court, and then typically, you know, for a serious crime, they're sentenced to the DOC, and they move on through the criminal justice system. We're not set up for long-term programming. You know, we're limited in space typically. And it creates huge challenges for trying to figure out how to keep these people safe from other inmates, safe from sometimes themselves. And, you know, it's difficult when you have that many people in for such serious crimes.
We talked a little bit about what is causing all of this. Briefly recap for me, you know, what have been some of the bills that have really tied your hands that have caused a bigger not necessarily a backlog, but the crimes that are taking place out there? What is some of the fault for that?
Yeah, so it's not necessarily tied to a specific bill as much as it is kind of the reactions we had as a society to COVID. So I know that many of the listeners know I got sued by the ACLU because I didn't have a desire to release prisoners from my jail and reduce the jail population for COVID. So we ended up getting an injunction from the federal courts that mandated we institute a certain type of arrest standard. So we can only accept people in the jail right now for lack of better terms, we're basically taking people in who have committed felonies, but low-level crimes. Those folks can't come to jail. So that creates a revolving door effect or a no-door effect. You know, if a person is contacted out in the community who's committed a crime and they can't be arrested for it, then, you know, they're released on a summons and turned back out to keep committing crime. Those that are brought to jail, if it's not a serious offense against another person, oftentimes, you know, let's say it's a car theft, oftentimes that person's given a personal recognizance bond or a very low cash bond, and they're released back out into society. So we have this issue where criminals become emboldened because they're not ever held accountable. And a lot of these crimes are driven by drug use and drug interaction. And so eventually things go haywire, and, you know, that same offender that was coming in for stealing cars may now end up coming in for a very serious assault or even homicide, because their criminal behaviors just continue to grow. It's a real tough situation right now, and our state legislature would love to take the model that's happened from 2020 and say, oh, this is good, let's turn it into law. And they actually attempted it this last legislative cycle. Luckily, a couple of the bills that they were pushing died or got pulled, but they continue to chip away at what I consider to be the rule of law.
Yeah, you know, speaking of those bills, you know, those bills would have taken in the initial bill, I think it was 62, 63, would have basically not allowed you to arrest people for certain what they call lesser, you know, crimes against property, because Representative Herod thinks that insurance pays for all that. And then the replacement bill for it turned around and said, well, you can go ahead and arrest them, but we're going to put them all out on PR bonds. And that goes back to, you know, what you said. You have somebody who is out there stealing cars or, you know, robbing liquor stores or grocery stores or whatever. Eventually, sometimes those crimes are going to go astray and they're going to end up, somebody's going to end up getting in their way. You're going to have a good Samaritan try to stop them. And then it goes from a crime against property to a crime against person. And you've just caused a bigger problem. And I'm assuming that's what everybody is worried about at this point.
That's absolutely the case, and we have a prime example of that from the murder case that happened over in just on the outskirts of Windsor. You know, that was a meth-fueled tirade that the guy was on. I don't know a better way of describing it, but he was stealing cars. He was, he was in the middle of all kinds of a mess, and he was confronted by a vehicle owner that he ended up, quite frankly, murdering. And then he tried to do the same to a young child. Luckily, some additional adults came home while he was in the middle of it, so it stopped his murder attempt on the young child. But it didn't stop him from creating serious injury to that child, killing an adult, and then going on a spree across northern Colorado of car theft and many other things. That case in itself is a prime example of some of the issues we dealt with and will continue to deal with under these these crazy COVID times, I guess.
Right. Well, and you look, and one of the other ones that I brought up just happened recently as well. You look at this case where this guy was released early from jail on parole. We still don't know if it was due to COVID or if it was whatever reason they let him out, but they let him out early before he was ready. And he goes, stays with his mom in Eaton, and weeks later kills her. And this was another situation where you had a guy who probably should have still been in jail, but was out for one reason or another, whether it be a legislative thing or COVID or whatnot, but is then recommitting again. And now we have yet one more murder to take a look at. And it's not just happening in Weld County. You know, I came up from it with you, but when I went to file the CORA requests on Larimer and Adams, you know, Larimer had 22 suspects in jail and Adams had 43. So, you know, and then when I spoke with George Brockler, he suspects that the numbers are probably even bigger in the 18th Judicial District, where you've got 1 million people sitting down there just in that one district. So, you know, this appears to be a real problem. Where do we go from here? What do we do?
Well, I don't know what the specific answer is, but I've said many times over, we need to have a truth in sentencing bill that would be very good for the people of Colorado. That way you understand when someone is sentenced to 3 years in the Department of Correction, that likely is only 9 months. Or when someone's sentenced to 20 years in the Department of Corrections, that likely is only going to be about 8 years. That's what people need to understand. And they need to know how poorly their state is operating when it comes to holding offenders accountable. Because truly, if we can't figure out how to make the punishment fit the crime, then we're going to continue to see crime going up. And you know, you mentioned yesterday in one of our conversations that we should have a state ticker that shows every time a murder occurs. I guarantee you that would bring attention to how bad the criminal justice system is working in the state of Colorado.
I'm going to stop you real quick, Steve. Do you have a couple minutes to hang on? I want to get more into that. We're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll have more with Sheriff Steve Reams. This is Sherry Pife in for Gale.
It's a party in Northern Colorado's voice. 1310 KFKA. The Block Party, Wednesdays from 4 to 10 p.m.
Kevin Carr of Fat Guys at the Movies here. Don't forget to listen to my show every Saturday on KFKA. Now back to Mornings with Gale.
Come on, give it to me, baby.
And welcome back, everybody. Sherry Pipe in for Gale this morning from the Auto Collision Specialist Studios. We continue our conversation with Weld County Sheriff Steve Reams. Steve, yeah, when we left, we were talking about that ticker. And, you know, one of the things that we talked about was when I was at the Greeley Tribune, we used to always do this, and I'm sure you remember, every time somebody was killed in a fatal accident, at the end of the story, we would, in a fatal car accident, at the end of the story, we would always say, this was the 35th fatality on Weld County roads this year. And we had that ticker. And amazingly enough, we could see over the years, how it impacted driving. And I remember when the president came, President Bush came to Greeley one time. I think he was doing a fundraising for then Congresswoman Marilyn Musgrave. He helicoptered into Island Grove Park. And the big joke at the time was the Secret Service didn't want him on Weld County roads because they had heard about the fatality mark. You know, but how much would that, if you think about 103 people are sitting in jail just in the northern Colorado area among three counties, 25% of Colorado's population, how big would a ticker do if, you know, the local news ran a ticker every day, you know, the 3,000th murder of the year in Colorado? What would that do for people?
You know, I think it would be a wake-up call, and quite frankly, I think it's a great idea. I hate the fact that we're having this talk because it tells you that there's a problem in Colorado. There's probably a problem nationwide that we really turn a blind eye to. But they just become numbers if you don't kind of tell that story behind it. And so the idea of educating the public about, hey, yeah, this is what the effects of some of these policy decisions, some of these lawmaking decisions have on citizens in Colorado, and this is the ultimate price we pay is in this death toll for some of these actions. I think it would be highly educational for people and a good way for people to get reinvested in in their own safety and in safety in general and in their society.
Well, and I think the most important thing in all of this, and it goes back to what we just talked about in the last hour, is this is a success in many cases. This is a succession of events. This is somebody starts out by smoking pot, and the pot doesn't become enough for them, so they move on to meth, and then they run out of money because they can't afford the meth anymore. So then they go and they hold up a liquor store, and so then they hold up the liquor store, and the next time they hold up the liquor store, a Good Samaritan gets in the way, which, by the way, we're hearing an awful lot more of these days. Every time one of these instances happens, we're starting to hear more where Good Samaritans, even at the school, you know, we saw it in the shooting in Colorado, mm-hmm. where the student got involved, Good Samaritans trying to stop the crime or lessen the crime. So then a Good Samaritan gets in the way, and the guy who started off just smoking marijuana is now in a fight with another guy, and it ends up in murder. So we're not talking, this isn't, in many cases, this isn't somebody just randomly going out and deciding to kill somebody. In many cases, this is that succession of going from crimes against property to crimes against people. So, because I don't want my listeners to have any view that we have a murder problem out there. You know what I mean? This could be an accumulation of problems. Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely correct. And you know, if you look at the offenders that are sitting in my jail, their offense of sitting in there for murder right now is typically not the first time they've ever been in jail. You're absolutely correct. They've usually been involved with some underlying crime for quite some time. Now, that's not across the board the case, but for the most part, that tends to be the case. But that's the case with most every criminal in my jail. You know, they may be sitting there for burglary. They may be sitting there for robbery, theft, whatever the case may be. But if you go and sit down and interview the inmates in my jail, which I do, we sit and talk with a lot of these folks. Many times they have a drug addiction that's leading to whatever crime they've been caught for. They may not get picked up on the drug crime, but they're getting picked up for something else.
And I hate to cut you off there, Steve, because it's been a great conversation, but I do need to go to break. But thank you so much for everything, and keep doing what you do.
Thank you, Sherry. I appreciate it.
You bet. Sherry Pife in for Gale.